You're listening to Clinical Conversations. I'm Joe Elia. This week saw the publication of a JAMA study on glioma that the journal's editorialists called the first in a decade to show an improved survival in the disease. The first author of that study, Dr. Roger Stupp, is our guest. Dr. Stupp is a professor of oncology at the University of Zurich and directs the Department of Oncology and the Cancer Center there. Welcome to Clinical Conversations, Dr. Stupp.
Hello, good morning.
And thank you, by the way. I should tell the listeners that we're separated by 13 hours of time zone, and it's been difficult. It's at about 6 o'clock in the morning your time. But to the question, so glioma is notoriously difficult to treat, and with a five-year survival rate, according to the editorialist on the paper, of about 5%. Tell us about your approach, which used temozolomide plus alternating current fields, and why did that approach seem to work in this study?
So let me actually specify, we're talking about a study in glioblastoma, which is the most aggressive and deadly form of glioma. And it usually takes a toll at the peak of the lifetime and in elderly patients. And it's true, the five-year survival rates are below 10% for the majority of patients. So the standard of care we published actually in the New England Journal of Medicine about 10 years ago when we established that temozolomide and radiation followed by temozolomide would improve overall survival in patients. In this study, we went one step further and we actually, after the chemo radiation, added alternating tumor treating fields to the standard of care in a randomized fashion. And this approach will interfere on a physical basis with growing and dividing tumor cells. It will interfere with cells during their cell division phase, with the establishment of the mitotic spindle due to the electrical fields. You will induce a polarization of polar molecules like the tubulins, and thus having that done in a specific frequency actually ultimately induce cell arrest and cell apoptosis. Now, this has been shown in vitro. It has been shown in animals. Actually, it has been shown in small animals, but it has also been shown in rabbits. And here we went into the definitive experiment in a randomized fashion.
So the science behind this has been verified in animals, and so it's really a physical effect. Then it's sort of an electromechanical effect, where you're subjecting these organelles, especially during mitosis, to the alternating fields of it was at 200 megahertz.
Correct.
Of alternating current.
Mm-hmm.
And that's delivered through a series of transducers that are placed onto the skull. Well, I think there were four transducers. Is that correct?
This is correct.
Okay. And those are placed on the skull, and they are placed in a position to have the most impact on the glioma.
So they are centered to focus on where the glioma arises, but they will actually treat the large part of the brain. And I think that's actually the beauty of the approach, because glioma is an invasive disease with no clear margins.
I see.
And so that's why after radiation and after surgery, we always leave some glioblastoma cells behind.
Now, the approach in earlier work in humans, I think, was not as successful as it was in this instance. Is that right?
This is right and wrong, if you want so.
Okay.
So we have done a prior study, also randomized study, in recurrent disease. And so far advanced disease against chemotherapy or against the best physician's choice treatment, which also included bevacizumab. And actually, there showed this trial was done was designed for superiority. That the superiority was not achieved,
okay.
But it was equally effective, or if you want, equally ineffective than any other treatment we had. It wasn't any worse. I think the difference here is that we actually took advantage of the synergy we also see in the laboratory of chemotherapy plus Tumor Treating Fields.
And Tumor Treating Fields, is that a proprietary term for the treatment? Because the editorialist refers to it as oscillating electronic currents, but the Tumor Treating Fields,
so,
is that?
So we I think for consistency we always call it Tumor Treating Fields.
Okay.
It's alternating electrical fields. I think what is going to become the established way of calling it, we'll see over time.
Okay. Now the editorialist, in addition to calling your research a sizable advance, was also cautious. And he said that the effect may have had to do with something called adherence bias, under which the people who are adherent to a treatment are more likely to benefit from it than people who are non-adherent. And he also points out that the treatment group, the group receiving the Tumor Treating Fields, also got two more cycles of temozolomide than the control group, which got the temozolomide alone. What's your reaction to that?
I think, this critic all of a sudden that this is a placebo effect came up with this trial, while it came up with none of the prior trials ever, and including the one with temozolomide published in New England 10 years ago. There was no placebo arm, nor any of the trials when we established radiation. It's just a technical issue that you cannot use a device where you would know immediately that this is not active because there is some heat associated with it and so on, or just electrical field. Any ingenious patient could just test whether there is anything happening there or not. So it's, for practical reasons, other than even all the ethical reasons, not feasible. Okay. This said, the outcome shows a prolongation of progression-free survival and consistently also of overall survival. Mm-hmm. To have a placebo effect based on that, I think, is very much unlikely. Mm-hmm. Last point was then the number of temozolomide cycles. Yes, indeed, more temozolomide cycles would be administered in the experimental arm because it took longer time until patients progressed. I think this is inherent in trial designs like this one. Here again, we have done trials together with the colleagues in the U.S. Looking at more temozolomide, dose dense temozolomide, and actually more cycles do not necessarily translate per se in a better outcome. So the optimal number of cycles, it's established in this paper from 2005, at 6 cycles in the U.S., until recently 12 cycles were given, and when we looked at it, there was no difference in overall outcome. So that's surely not what is going to make the difference.
Okay.
So let me go back to this question, adherence and compliance.
Okay.
I think the patients, of course, had to have some kind of compliance with the device, and it is surely so that patients who are motivated tend to get more treatment and do better. But this is to some extent here in both arms. They have been followed closely. So here again, I think the editorialist overstates the influence this may have.
Okay. Were the patients who went off treatment and decided that they didn't like the feeling of heat or whatever, or whatever reason they had, were they eliminated from consideration? Because and I'm going to answer my own question. I think you would say that you measured your primary outcome on the basis of intention to treat, didn't you?
Absolutely. I think the data, how we present it, is intention to treat.
Yeah.
The survival curves we present in the paper and what we talk about most of the time is intention to treat.
Yep.
It is true that the statistical analysis plan also looked at the per-protocol population. Mm-hmm. And for completeness, all this data is also presented in the paper in the supplementary appendix. But here, the data is presented in the most conservative way, including the patients never got the treatment, patients who discontinued tumor treating fields after a few days or weeks for whatever reason other than tumor progression.
Okay. The benefit realized by the patients under the tumor treating fields arm was something on the order of 4 months, is a median of about 4 months additional progression-free survival and overall survival. Is that a fair assessment, 4 to 5 months?
So the median is 3 months, but to be honest, it's not the median that really matters. Mm-hmm. We have to look at the hazard ratio, and the hazard ratio is 0.74 for overall survival, and it is 0.62 for progression-free survival, always in intent to treat. And if you look at survival at 2 years, this actually means an absolute improvement of the at 2 years of 14% from actually 29 to 43%. And we think this is not only statistically relevant, but also meaningful.
The editorialist points out that the treatment cost is about $20,000 a month. Is he accurate in saying that? Do you know what the price is?
So I know the price is approximate what has been reported to me, as I'm not involved in the marketing of the device. Uh-huh. But yes, the price is around that order of magnitude.
Okay.
Which is the price we pay, actually, even less than what we pay when we treat with modern chemo immunotherapy or the frequently used agent bevacizumab. So it's in the same price range.
Okay. I just wanted to verify that that was a good rough estimate of the price, and I would leave it to the manufacturers to explain it, but I won't ask you to explain that. Does a patient undergoing this treatment do they have to have those transducers placed by specialists from the company, or with oncologists and radiation therapists be learning to do this?
So you surely don't need the oncologist or the radiation oncologist to do so. Initially, we thought we would provide a technician and a nurse all the time for the patients being accessible at some technical center to actually place the transducers. From experience now, patients become very independent and very quickly. So you instruct them for the first week, and then they say, we do everything ourselves. It's a caregiver, or many patients even do it themselves in front of a mirror,
okay.
Which allows them to be completely independent, travel, and so on. So I have been impressed, actually, how independent with this device the patients got and didn't need much of an attention.
Are these transducers, do they lay flat against the scalp?
Yeah.
Okay, so people could be wearing hats or something.
They have a hat, they have a wig, many have a baseball cap on, okay. And you hardly see it.
Okay. And now for the benefit of our audience of working clinicians who are not oncologists, what should primary care physicians be thinking differently next week when they encounter a patient with glioma as a result of your work?
I think if we can get some of this nihilism and pessimism away, you know, we all learned at medical school that glioblastoma is a deadly disease. You die within a year or 15 months, and there is nothing really that can be done. And I think clearly we have shown that with adequate treatment, with adequate care, we can prolong survival, we can improve quality of life, we can reduce steroids, which many patients are often overdosed or too long exposed to steroids, which has its own side effects. And so with better care, we get them adequate treatment. Of course, it's for most patients still a palliative treatment, as for many advanced or metastatic cancer, and not necessarily a cure yet. But we should not underestimate even a median of 3 months but sometimes many more months, what this means for patients and families.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for your time with us, especially at this early hour, Dr. Stope.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for listening to our 193rd podcast. Go to our website, podcasts.jwatch.org, to find other conversations of clinical interest. My executive producer is Kristen Kelly. We come to you through the NEJM Group.